This is the Muscles and Management Podcast, where we build your body and your business. Talking all things training, sports performance, and business for athletes and aspiring coaches to enhance your training and better your career. Muscles and Management is brought to you by Challenger Strength with your host, Jerry DiFilippo.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to episode 208 of the Muscles and Manager podcast. As always, please rate, review, and subscribe if you have not already. We got a lot to get to today, guys. I'm really excited about a couple different things. Some really great tweets to go over. Some great follower questions from all of you. Things like that that we always would get to. I think one thing I definitely want to cover before we get to anything today. So I don't know if you saw it. You probably did. It was, you know, pretty active on my Twitter in terms of the back and forth on it. Essentially, I was sent a tweet last Thursday about the Eastern Illinois baseball team doing a two-mile run. All the tweet literally said was our traditional two-mile run, and then it listed three players who got – one got a gold, one got a silver, one got a bronze based on their times that they finished in. And I, you know, basically quote tweeted it because you guys all know how I feel about stuff like that. And I said, if you want to see a good waste of time, here you go. You know, must be for toughness or for teamwork or whatever. You know, the usual stuff that goes on. So I said that, and I didn't degrade anybody. I didn't say any coaches were stupid. I didn't say this program sucks. I didn't say avoid going here. None of that, because they do run a really great program and they've had success. So didn't say a word about that. All I said. You know, it got likes and it did whatever. And then I think lo and behold, it ended up getting back to the coaching staff at Eastern Illinois, to which I was then blocked by their baseball account. And then I got an angry DM from an assistant coach saying I'm using my platform or I could use my platform in a better way. I'm irresponsible. Didn't think he would have to tell a grown man the things he was telling me, and blah, blah, blah. And to which I said, you put something on the internet, it's free range for people to talk about it. He made a point that it was part of their usual yearly challenge. It was just done once. I should have asked for some context. Well, last I checked, tweets have the ability to have 240 characters, and you could also follow up, reply additional things to tweets. So if you're not going to put context yourself, it's not up to the consumer of the tweets to add context for you or to just make assumptions. So, I saw the tweet and I reacted to it. You know, a lot of the feedback from them was, this isn't the only thing we do. We do a lot of good other different things. It's one time per year, whatever. That's it. Fine. You know, they're looking at me saying, you have this gigantic platform and it's an irresponsible way to use it and all this other stuff. To which my reply back was, okay, well, you know, you have a fairly big platform on this baseball, Eastern Illinois baseball account. A lot of coaches follow you, a lot of parents, you know, people like that. They see this tweet that you put out there with no context, that it's a one time per year thing, it's a tradition, whatever. I don't think it's really worth to do anyway, but, you know, I could understand it a little more in that sense. However, when you put that out there and don't give any explanations to how it's a one-time-per-year thing, you don't normally do this in your training, whatever, and you're a Division I baseball program with a lot of followers, people who are still stuck in the old ways of making baseball players run, pitchers especially, are going to see this and use it as justification to continue to run their players into the ground. They're not going to do it just one time per year. They're going to do it all pretty often, and they're going to justify it by saying, oh, I saw things like this, it must still be okay, whatever. When I see things like that, and I feel like that's going to happen, I'm going to use my platform to continue to hammer it into the heads of everybody that this is not something we should be doing, there's different ways to do it, all this other stuff, right? So that's my main intention with this, is to make people understand that, yes, for baseball players, running 2 miles is largely a waste of time. Some other replies back, like, if you can't run 2 miles, are you a good athlete? It's really not the point. It's like, what are we prioritizing and spending our time on as baseball players? The aerobic threshold, or the aerobic level, is way lower than you would actually expect. And my main point about this entire thing was, you know, there are better ways to spend your time. I genuinely think there are people on social media or on social media that are strength coaches that Yeah, I get it. Like, you got to be conditioning in some capacity. So, like, anybody who's saying conditioning itself is a waste of time, it's not the right way to go about things. But, like, I generally feel like there are people out there that are just trying to be different and create their own niche as, like, a conditioning person or someone who likes running or whatever it is, who is just saying that long-distance running for athletes is good or misunderstood, or people who bash it are idiots just because they want to have their own niche topic to talk about, right? Like, there are a lot of good coaches out there that talk about speed or things related to speed, or how, you know, running multiple miles as a team sport athlete is probably a waste of time, and there are different types of training that make more sense that have to do with, you know, intervals based on the work-rest capacity or work-rest ratio of sport, things like that. There are a lot of good people out there saying that. So if you're not well known, you know, why keep chiming into that heap and just be another person? Why not just come out here and be the conditioning person or the conditioning guy or whatever you want to say, and just go completely to the opposite end of the spectrum, saying that all these people that talk about, you know, running miles for athletes as not being ideal are idiots and they're wrong and they don't look, you know, into the intricacies and the whatever. They want to go to that far end of the spectrum just to be different and have something different to talk about, right? I firmly believe that. So I think that's something there to say. And I also think, and this is a tweet that I had put out, I'm pretty sure I had a tweet selected for today to talk about, but basically the idea that, like, you can be anti-running tons of miles for athletes and still believe and support the idea of, you know, doing conditioning and that being important, and respecting energy systems and the need for aerobic capacity and an aerobic base. I don't think they're mutually exclusive, and I think if you try to make them out to be that way, you're going down the wrong path. So I thought this was just a great learning point. And I also just thought it was a really good example of, like, some of the BS that goes on social media. You know, these people obviously don't know me very well to sit there and say that I'm bashing, first of all, their video. I didn't really bash anyone, other than just kind of, like, softly saying that running long distance is a waste of time, which I've been saying for 5 years. You know, and I didn't call anybody out or use derogatory names or do anything like that, call anybody's reputation into question, anything like that. You know, for these people to get all up in arms about this, it's just really interesting to me. Generally speaking, someone who really gets defensive over themselves, it, you know, feels like they have something to defend. I can't tell you how many people now reply to my tweets with disagreements and are quite rude. I don't even answer them anymore because I really don't care at this point. Like, you know, I know my stuff is good. I know if I explain it well enough that, like, I don't owe anybody an explanation outside of the context I'm putting. And I also know that, like, my social media platform, there's so much free stuff put out there every day and every week to educate people that, like, I'm going to be the last person you're going to sit there and tell that, like, they need to criticize someone else's work to get likes and follows. I get likes and follows because I put out good content consistently, and I've been doing that for 6 years. So that's just the bottom line on that, right? So that's, like, I'm the wrong person to go down that road with. You know, and I just feel like we still have come. I talked to my friend Cody Hughes about this. Cody and I had a conversation about this last week when this whole thing kind of broke out. And, you know, he said he understood, like, he finally started to understand, like, why I still bash my head against the wall and I hammer home these basic ideas of a lot of these topics, like conditioning and lifting being okay for children and all these basic things, because there are so many people who still don't get it. And there are so many platforms with tons of followers that still promote bad stuff. So, like, until we get to a point where a majority of the baseball industry, the strength training industry, or the sports industry understand these basic things, I have to assume that they're not largely understood yet by a majority of people. So I have to keep on planting that flag and keep on hammering that basic stuff over and over and over again. There's no room right now for me to talk about intricacies with a large majority of people, because they are not in the position to understand intricacies. They need to just get pulled off of that side and thinking that that stuff is the right thing to do, and then we can talk about intricacies. Just like Cody and I discussed last week when I posted a video of, like, a minute and a half of MLB footage, how a pitcher threw two pitches over a minute and a half, and yet we still think running long, you know, distance and miles is something that's necessary. And he replied back, like, you know, I understand and I agree largely, but have you seen some of the heart rate data on pitchers and how their heart rate's pretty high? You know, again, you can make the argument whether it's psychological and nerves or whatever it is, but lo and behold, it's a little bit higher than you would think. Like, where does that leave us with aerobic work? And I said to him, I said, me and you can have this conversation, but I think a large majority of people in the baseball field to this day are still not ready to have this conversation. Until football coaches stop having their linemen run 16 110s, like 110-yard shuttles, I think we still need to keep hammering this home that that's not the right thing to do. Until they understand that that just isn't the right way to go about things, I don't think we could start to have intricate conversations with them about different types of energy systems and the work-rest ratio of sport. We're just not ready for that yet. We need to continue to hammer this home and establish these basic ideas, and then we can start to, you know, spread them out and spread the layers a little bit thinner and see where we are with a lot of these things. So I really think that, you know, we need to understand that we have a long way to go with some of these basic concepts before we can start to get super intricate. So that's all I really have on that. I'm trying to remember and think back if I had any videos that got a lot of, you know, feedback or talk this week. I don't think there was anything too crazy. I'm going to look back now on my Instagram and just see. So, yeah, there was nothing really this week that was too controversial. A couple of really good videos that I thought that I liked a lot that I was happy with. We had heavier sled pushes being great for athletes. That was a good one. Check that out. But I also just talked about the mechanics you need to be using when you use them. So just keep that in mind. I had difference between drop jumps and depth jumps. That was a good post from this week. So definitely check out things like that if you haven't yet. Shifting gears a bit. And before I do that, I want to just give another reminder to everybody. Subscribe to the newsletter if you haven't already. Goes out every week. It'll be going out today. We're a day behind. I'm sorry. It'll be so you're listening to this on a Thursday. So it went out yesterday because we were a day behind this week from the holiday. But it's been going out every week for the past like 6 weeks, and you know it's rich with a lot of information. So you know, subscribe to that if you haven't already. It's available right on my Twitter feed at the top of my page. So go do that if you haven't yet. All right. So first tweet of the week: best programming in the world, best strength coach in the world, fanciest training equipment money can buy, most intense training sessions. All are so, so powerful, and yet even together, they cannot combat inconsistency when it comes to getting results. Athletes, remember this. And I'll say parents remember this too, because for young kids, a lot of the parents are the ones making decisions. Another topic where I have to keep, you know, talking till I'm red in the face about it and just keep on stressing it, because so many people still don't understand what you need to be doing in terms of consistency to get actual results, to get faster, to jump higher, to get stronger. You know, said it once, I'll say it again. Training is not something that you do for a month and just forever hold on to the gains you made in that month. I understand training 3 to 4 days a week isn't feasible for, you know, 12 months out of the year for a lot of athletes, but like, if you're busy with your schedule, you have to try 1 day, 2 days. Like, you got to do that. Now, on top of that, I could tell you right now, the best athletes we worked with, there's a clear distinction between, like, them and the, how they make time for their training. Like, it's such a priority to them that they will, you know, alter their schedule and move things around and, you know, make sure that they have time to even get to us for an hour if they have to. The other athletes, the not so high level athletes, it really starts to boil into a, you know, a big excuse game. Like, what, you know, I have this popped up, or I can't make it because of this, or whatever it is. Like, they can find any reason to not come to train. Whereas the elite athletes who work really hard, and, you know, listen, I'm not oblivious. I understand some people have really good genetics and they aren't the hardest workers with their training or their speed training. But like, if you're a general average athlete who needs to get stronger and faster to have more success with their sport, and you want to be quote unquote that higher level athlete, make it to college or, you know, whatever it is, you know, you need to be that person that prioritizes like anything they can do to get their training, and they're going to do, okay? And there's just such a clear difference, and I could tell, you know, really, really tell when people are, you know, going to make a priority about it, and when they're going to get results and when they're not going to. And I just want to – people get so caught up in, is the program good? Is the equipment good? Is the coach good? And that's all super important. You want to look for all of that, right? However, – you need to understand that all of that being said, if you do not show up to implement and use those things week in and week out, the results won't be there no matter how good they are. And I think that's such an important thing to continue to drive home for everybody. Next up, athletes. Take care of your feet and ankles. Do some training barefoot. Spend 2 to 3 times per week hopping on both feet and one foot. Hop around barefoot. do multi-directional hops and expose the foot to as many contact angles as possible. So I've obviously the last couple of years been really, you know, into the ankle and calf and foot complex when it comes to sprinting and jumping and vertical or stiffness, ankle stiffness, you know, not getting heel collapse when you sprint, all things like that. And I think a big help for us has been the pogo jump routines. And for years now, we've been doing deadlifts and squats barefoot. And people used to ask, why are you doing that? And I just think it's so valuable to get that relationship with the ground and to, you know, expose the foot to be able to use the toes and the feet as individuals. Because when you put these shoes on all the time, you know, they're really starting to take away the identity of your foot. And it's just kind of everything clustered into one big unit. And I think it's really important and valuable to be working on these things. You know, so the barefoot part, the multiple pogo jumps, the single leg pogo jumps. And then I also think just like giving your body and your foot as many angles of contact exposure that you can when it comes to doing your pogo jumps and things of that nature. So single leg, side to side, turning around, back and forth, you know, moving around like that. Just how many different combinations of angles and new different things can we expose our foot to when it comes to contacts? It's going to just do so much for us for different angles, whether you're a skater, a football player, a baseball player. Like how many different times you're going to contact the ground with different parts of your foot and toe. To be able to expose yourself to more of those in training, I think could be extremely valuable for things like stability or for landing not only efficiently but safely to reduce the likelihood of injury. I think all of those things are super important and we cannot neglect them. So I think that was an important one to touch on. This one I really like, and it's something I've talked about before, but not for a little while, so I definitely wanted to hit on it again. 50% of your max loaded on a bar can be a deload. 50% of your max loaded on a bar can be for power training. 50% of your max loaded on a bar can be for hypertrophy training. What dictates this? Tempo, aka prescribed speed. Intent. Your determined desire to move a load. Remember that. Again, I think this is another instance, and it's similar to my tweet before about, you know, having all those different factors that make a program and a coach and all that stuff great, but if it's not consistent, you're not going to get the most out of it. You can prescribe the exact perfect ideal rep ranges and bar load for, you know, what would supposed to be, you know, supposedly be power work, but if you're not moving the bar as fast as possible every rep, you're not going to get the most out of that. You can put 10 to 12 reps on a set for hypertrophy, and if you just kind of go through the motions and don't go slow enough or really feel the muscles working, you're not going to get the hypertrophy effect that you want, right? So I think it's important to kind of drive that home that we need to make sure that we are putting the right intent in with these different things to be getting the effect that we desire. So it's not just as simple as, you know, loading schemes and, you know, rep ranges and any of that. Like, that's important. You need to be in the right zones with all of that to get the results that you want. But if you are not trying to move the bar as fast as possible or with enough tempo or whatever it is, you're not going to get the effect that you were looking for unless you were doing that type of stuff. So it just goes to show you that little extra of that connection with your mind and what your plan and your purpose are can go a long way in achieving those results. Next up, and I already touched on this a little bit, but I want to do it again. You can value the aerobic system and still, one, ridicule overdone conditioning, two, tell a coach most of their old school tests suck, three, think team sport athletes would be better served to not go on multiple mile runs. I know it's hard for some to think critically, but it's true. This just speaks to all the people that have, you know, started to go out and gang up on or start to speak out against coaches who speak out against, you know, all those aforementioned things. It is very possible to still believe that athletes need to condition and it's still important and you can still be someone who does it and understand that a lot of the ways in which we do it are not ideal, right? I think that's super important to understand. You need to have a balanced approach, right? You shouldn't be thinking that there should be no purpose for any types of conditioning, but at the same time, you should not be running your athletes into the ground and doing ridiculous types of things with them, right? Once we get past the idea of understanding and getting people to understand that, you know, doing all these ridiculous things isn't necessary, we can then start to have the more intricate conversation about, you know, what's good, what's bad, what should we be doing differently, all things of that nature, okay? So I think it's super important to understand there is a balanced approach that is possible between the two, and it is not an all or nothing type conversation. All right. Well, I think we have one more tweet here, and then we're going to get to some questions. Yeah, last one. Hey, athletes, in 2 days, September will begin. So now we're a week into September. You'll have 4 weeks to sprint and jump at max speed 2 to 3 times per week, add 5 pounds weekly to each of your main lifts. You'd be surprised what could happen by October if you do that. Go for it. Yeah, I just think, again, it goes back to just getting out and going to do something and being consistent and getting on a schedule, and how many athletes just do not understand that, like, it doesn't have to be that hard, right? It can be done. It is possible. And if you just go do those simple things that I mentioned in that tweet, like do them for 4 weeks, like the amount of results that you can get in just 4 weeks, 2 months, like it's insane, right? Sprint and jump at max speeds, be diligent with your lifting and try to get stronger and add a little bit of weight each week. And just, you will be so shocked at where you could be in even just 4 weeks. I think so many athletes get so, you know, intimidated by how daunting the journey feels and what goes into it can feel and how all that can kind of, you know, add up. And I think they start to get afraid of even starting, or just like, you know, oh, it's just so much to get done. Why even bother getting going? And I think that if we can really work against that mindset and just understand that, you know, if we get started, we can make a lot of progress. And even just a month, we can accomplish a lot. So I think that's super important to understand. All right, so let's get to some questions to round things out here. Had some good ones this week. First, we have from Ryan Abel, Director of Ops at FAU Baseball, and also seems to be a hitting coach. In terms of gaining followers, any advice or insight you'd have and be willing to share? I wanted to grow my reach for sake of information, career, and networking goals. So this is a really good question. I think the biggest thing that I would say right off the bat is consistency. No matter what it is that you're trying to do in terms of the content you're trying to share, I don't care if you're in fantasy sports, strength training, sports skill like baseball or football or anything like that, politics, whatever it is that you're in, consistency is key. Anybody that's, you know, gathered a large following, it's been over the course of time with consistent posts, right? So you have to be consistent. On top of that, it cannot just be consistency that's garbage. It needs to be quality consistency, right? So you have to start with the consistency, but make sure your product and what you're putting out there and your information and your content is quality, right? Can someone take what you are putting out there and learn from it? Can they view what you are putting out there and laugh from it, right? I think in strength conditioning, especially, or in sports, being able to teach things but also make them funny and relatable is big. Like, you know, I've had a couple memes get a couple thousand likes on Twitter that's got me a bunch of followers. Like, you know, the good content helps, but like the funny stuff, you know, can also be something that you could find value with, right? In addition to that, so you got consistency and you have quality. I think you need to just find out what it is that you're going to talk about, right? Like, what is it that you do? Like, if you are a hitting coach, can you post the hitters you're working with? Can you show people you're actually working with actual human beings and getting results with them and helping them improve? And then can you talk about what you're doing with them in a way to help other people learn and get better? I think when you combine those two things, you really get the best of both worlds in terms of, hey, I'm a real person, I'm working with real people and getting results with real people, and here's what you can learn from what I'm doing. Not only are you teaching the people something, but you're showing them you're relatable, actually work with human beings and get results. I think all of that is huge. Last but not least, I would say from a networking standpoint, you generally speaking, you know, you want to interact with other coaches, but don't come across in a way that you're just trying to promote what you do and your name and your following and everything like that. Like, engage with coaches. If they do something that you like, you can, you know, post yourself doing it or your athletes doing it and share it. But I think just like looking like the person who just always drops themselves in on like a popular tweet because you want to be seen. I have people that do it to me, like, oh, check out my XYZ or check out this or whatever it is. It's just very obvious when someone's intentions are to just gain themselves some publicity and popularity from commenting on something. So generally I would say, like, if you're going to interact with coaches, do it in a way that's actually looking like you're trying to have a conversation and learn and share ideas versus, you know, promoting yourself. You don't want to get the reputation of being someone like that. And I promise you, I'm way more likely, and this is just my personal opinion, I'm way more likely to answer someone or to engage with them if it seems like they're genuine in their approach to how they're doing it. So that would be my advice on that, and I hope that is helpful. Next, we have this is from Pete, and he has no other names here, so we just got Pete. Hey, Jerry, I really love your content. Keep up the great work. Thank you, Pete. I am a young and new athletic director. Congratulations. And I have a football coach who loves to run our athletes to the ground at the end of each practice. We are 2 days into football and have had multiple kids puking and worn out. We already struggle to get enough kids to try out. Do you have any good resources you could point me to help me explain this coach that this old school mentality is not helping our athletes in our football program? Thank you. I think first and foremost, numbers don't lie. Like, if you're having a hard time getting kids to come out and try out for your sport and you already have a small student body, you know, the bottom line speaks loudest. If you tell this guy, hey, you know, we are having kids quit in droves, we're having no one want to come out for the sport, and you're going to have no one that actually comes out to field the team, you know, that speaks the loudest in terms of, like, I should probably try to do something differently or else no one's going to come play for me, okay? Now, if that's not enough, I would then go and I would start to look up information, and you could just literally Google this, on the various work-to-rest ratios of high school, college, and professional football. It will show you a 1-to-6-second work-to-rest ratio, roughly 1-to-5-ish, 1-to-5.5, 1-to-6, depending on the level of football, of work-to-rest. I would show that to him and say, where are we, you know, how are we achieving the needs of the sport by doing nonstop running till athletes puke? Because last I checked, we're not seeing athletes puke on the field. And last I checked, if you want to use a really good example, I saw a video of Georgia Tech football this weekend where one of their offensive linemen was quite literally jogging after a block and cost his team probably about 15 yards, because if he hit the block, the guy would have been able to go upfield. And Georgia Tech is one of those teams that always talks about, like, culture, going hard, doing a lot of stuff, whatever. If the most in-shape people were the toughest people and the most skilled people, we'd see a lot of cross-country runners that were all-state football players, right? Point out people like Christian McCaffrey. Christian McCaffrey's off-season training, his conditioning is literally just taking his playbook and running his routes with a similar work-to-rest and stoppage time in between that you would get in a game, right? And just continuing to do that over the course of 100 yards and just building up and doing things that way. And then last but not least, you know, try to go out there and follow guys like Florida Atlantic University. Joey Garacio does a great job with their conditioning, you know, making it more relatable to linemen and their position players with how they do the interval structure and how they make what they're doing during their conditioning more relatable to football. So linemen are, you know, pushing sleds or doing curvilinear sprints, and they're just doing the work to rest ratio in a way that applies to the sport. Right, so if you can go out and find some strength and conditioning coaches that are doing it at a Division I or a pro level and having success with it, then I think it's a good recipe to kind of maybe just convince somebody that they need to just do things just slightly differently. All right, so I think, you know, above all else, you know, let them know, hey, the numbers are speaking loudest. You know, we're having trouble recruiting kids out to play because they're, you know, you're doing all this ridiculous stuff. I would look at the actual technicalities of the work-to-rest ratio and try to explain it. And then if all else fails, point to people that are really high up in the field and, you know, just say, hey, listen, you know, these people are doing it this way and they're pretty successful at what they do. It might be a good indication that, you know, we should start to change what we are doing. So that is my take on that. Last two here. This is from Darden. On Instagram, that's all it really says, so I'm going with that. Hey, absolutely love your page and the content you post. Well, thank you. Was curious what education you got, if any, or are you mostly self-taught? If you have any courses or book recommendations for me to read upon, please let me know. So I always, and I've gone over this many times, I do not have a formal education in the field. I do have a formal education in terms of high school and college. I have an undergraduate degree, Bachelor of Science in Management from Rutgers Business School in New Jersey. I also minored in legal studies, so that's was actually honestly been one of the more helpful things for me in terms of having my own business, is having some of that, you know, I've having six or seven law classes that I took, you know, learning a lot of the basics of law and legal, you know, whether it's vocabulary or principles or reading up on old cases and learning things about slander and libel and all these other various things that are super helpful with the stuff that you're going to run into as a business person. But anyway, when it comes to the field itself of strength and conditioning and training, my education essentially was self-taught in the sense of me seeking out, you know, different information and reading up on it. So, you know, I was taught by other people, but just I had to, you know, seek out these different resources and learn from them. Basically, I would say my most recommended things to check out, and I don't want to make this as a plug, but I have a book that I released called The Conjugate Method for Athletes. It was 2 years ago or a little more than 2 years ago during COVID, the first initial kind of crazy quarantine that we had. I sat down and I wrote this entire ebook, and it really goes through my entire philosophy of training, who I learned from, who's inspired me, Joe DeFranco, Louis Simmons, Charles Poliquin, Charlie Francis. And I think if you look at those, that ebook, and you buy that, and it goes into a lot about, you know, who inspired me, and you can kind of dig into who things about those people and stuff that they've released. I think it's a really good start. It goes into a bit of like my programming philosophies and what I believe in and how I structure things. The CPPS certification by Joe DeFranco and Jim Smith has been very helpful to me. I took it back in 2016, right before I started my business. I did the in-person kind of two-day weekend that combines with 6 weeks of book learning leading into a two-day weekend of hands-on actual stuff, talking about program design, assessments, coaching the big barbell movements, coaching sprint mechanics, talking about a litany of things. There's a little bit of business involved. And then you have a really extensive, pretty much, I think it was 50-page document that you had to fill out for a test, like written questions, program design, samples. You have to do about 10 to 12 different videos you have to upload to YouTube of you coaching various lifts. Like, you really, really, really immerse yourself into it when you're doing this certification. You're going to spend about $1,000, but man, when I tell you, like, bang for your buck what you're going to take from that thing, like, that set me up so well. And then there's also the entire community style part of it. So you get put into a Facebook group with every other CPPS qualified coach ever. I want to say there's 400 to 500 now, if not more. Joe and Jim are in that group, and they answer regularly. It's a place you can ask questions about training, and other members can answer. You can, you know, find a job through the Facebook group. You can find athletes through the Facebook group. Like, it's really great, the access they give you when it comes to that. So I would go check into that if that's something, if you have the money to, you know, spend and you're looking to spend money on a resource, that would be where I would go. As for books, DeFranco's Speed Manual, Power Manual, Poliquin Principles has been a big one for me. A lot of what Louis Simmons did with the weightlifting side of West Side Barbell, you know, some of the approaches to that when it comes to the conjugate style programming, you know, that's where I would start if it comes to trying to learn things on your own. So I hope that's helpful. Last but not least, Tiger Backmeyer. I'm a high school football athlete. I have games on Friday and I practice Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday. When should I do top velocity sprint training during the week? So if you have nothing on the weekend, which is what it sounds like based on your message, I would generally advise that after the weekend's up, take your Saturday and Sunday to recover, and then Monday I would start off with your top velocity, your top speed sprinting before your practices. And it gives you the time to be fresh. It allows you to start the week off with that before you are too fatigued from all your practices and games. And I think just from what you're explaining from your schedule, that's the best way to do it. I think for everyone else to learn from this would just be to, like, really lay your schedule out like he did in the question to me and start to answer the questions of when you should do things based on what logic tells you based on the layout of that schedule. So that's how I would handle that. But if there's going to be a learning point for every athlete that's listening to this or every coach listening to this, is to lay your schedule out and just try to find the ways or the things that make the most sense from a programming standpoint. And that's what I do with a lot of the clients or the athletes that we work with in person, a lot of my remote athletes. A big part of it is load management and giving them, you know, insight on when they should do things just based on my experience and what I've seen that works. And then obviously, you know, what science tells us from a body standpoint. So that's it for this week on questions. I hope you guys enjoyed this episode as always. Had a fun time with this one. Please, as always, give feedback. Post it on your Instagram story if you liked it. Tweet at me. Let me know what you think or things that you want to hear more about or things you liked about this episode in particular. And always ask questions. DM me questions on Instagram and on Twitter. I will always be using those for these episodes, and you'll even get a shout out if you actually have a name on there that I can decipher and make sense of. So thank you guys for listening again, and we will talk to you next week. Peace. Thank you for listening to another episode of Muscles in Management brought to you by Challenger Strength. I'm your host, Jerry DiFilippo, signing off from the show that's changing how we view sports performance, training, and business.